Yasharanana, Bhajana Ranjana. Yasharanana, Bhajana Ranjana. Nidhamuna Tira Vamachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari, Jaragdamana Vakunja Bihari, Gopi Janna Balava Girimara Dari. Yasharanana Bhajana Ranjana. Yasharanana Bhajana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Papu Pada. Prabhu Pada, Jaya Prabhu Pada. Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Our glorious is some devotees, our glorious is some devotees, our glorious is some devotees. I don't really have a verse today, but I have a quote from Srila Prabhupada, which is our scriptures also, quotes by the great acharyas, and it's kind of been inspired by recent activities as far as elections and presidents and things like that, what's going on in this civilized or uncivilized world. So this is a little conversation that Prabhupada was having in his comment. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This is Srila Prabhupada speaking. Regarding your point, program for a spiritual world civilization. This is a very nice suggestion. And practically, our Krishna consciousness movement is built on this idea that we want to make a world civilization on the basis of spiritual understanding. So I am giving you some points which you may expand or do it for understanding of the people in general. But the point should be as follows. First point, that any civilization devoid of God consciousness or Krishna consciousness is no civilization at all. It is simply a polished type of animal society. This point should be clearly discussed, that without God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, any attempt of human civilization, so-called philosophical or political or economical or labor, they are all zeros. So much for Prabhupada's. There's hundreds of quotes about this type of thing by Srila Prabhupada. I think he had a lot of realizations when he pulled into the port of Boston Harbor. So the Vedas are considered one of our seven mothers, and the Vedas are full of spiritual and material knowledge, as we've been told. And it's very important that this spiritual knowledge is there. It's considered something like a railroad down the street here that you pass. It has two tracks. And so to be really going smoothly, you need material and spiritual. You need two parallel tracks. Otherwise, you can get derailed if you don't have that spiritual knowledge. And the direction that we're going is, of course, to become God conscious. And so Prabhupada is discussing this importance of the foundation of a real society is that everyone's trying to progress together to God consciousness, God realization. So this is very much adapted to us by Krishna himself. He sent us to this material world, but he gave us equipment to be able to actually progress and become liberated and go back to him. So he gave us the Vedas. So much information that we have, both materially and spiritually. And he sent incarnations, he sent different forms of himself, he came himself, spoke Bhagavad Gita, he sends representatives. I mean, he's doing his part. He's done a lot. And those people that take advantage of that, then they can actually see a society become very advanced and can actually help each other in this progress. But most people don't take advantage of this. This Vedic society has been going on since the creation. The Vedas were there at the time of creation. Lord Brahma spoke the Vedas. Krishna says, I am the Vedas. So it is important for us to understand that this civilization has been going on way before the historians think that there was civilization or even primitive life. I think they go back maybe 40,000 years. They found some bones or something and said, oh, these were primitive, the first primitive humans or something like this. But, of course, that's always changing depending on what day of the week it is. But anyway, so this is it really important to understand that this Vedic culture has been there all the time. And it was very advanced. There's so much evidence. If you read Stephen Knopf's book about how the culture spread throughout the world, or you read Devaramita Swami's book about the Vedic search in Vedic India, so much evidence is there that this Vedic culture actually spread all over the world. And there's evidence. I was in Finland somewhere, and you could see the names of the streets were almost like Sanskrit. I mean, all over the place, Sanskrit language is there. I went to Angkor Wat, and then the whole, you know, Cambodia in the middle of nowhere, there's this whole, you know, city, which is an exact replica of the Vedic planetary system and everything, Mount Meru, everything. So this is was a very advanced civilization, much to the chagrin of the historians. And so some of the sciences we're a little bit familiar with. Ayurveda is becoming very popular now because it's telling you how to, you know, be fit, how to be preventative so you don't get sick, herbs and so many different things like that. And then you have the sciences like Dandirveda, which is all about military and how there were atomic bombs way back there, the Brahmastra. There's the Manusmriti was there, law book for mankind. It was followed for thousands of years. Very strict laws to keep everyone in shape, keep everyone centered and spiritual. The Yajurveda, that was all about moving vehicles, how to move things. And there's one specific shastra about vimanas, or flying airplanes and things like that, all kinds of different kinds of airships. And they were moved by 8 different kinds of natural elements. And one of them is mercury, which now they're rediscovering that, oh, that can actually help in our moonshots and things like that. And then there's also, it could be moved by gems. Haven't gotten there yet. If they would study it, maybe they could make it to Mars. So there was also some other ones. There was the Atharva Veda, which is all about medicine, about surgery. They were expert in surgery, making different limbs for people, amputees. They could cure neuralgia. They had, I mean, way beyond what we can do now. And then they told how to make ships. Supposedly there were many, many ships, and they could direct the ships by, they would have a magnet floating in oil, which would give them the direction. And this was thousands and thousands of years ago, you know, when they thought people were just in canoes. And then there's how to make a balloon, a flying balloon out of silk threads. So many interesting things. Telescopes, they had that down. Mathematics, astrology, all these things are there in the Vedas. But it's all written off as mythology. It's just mythology. How unfortunate. We're wasting so many time and all of our tax dollars doing research to try to find all these things out. But it did, the Germans, they started studying Sanskrit, and some of their great philosophers started reading the Vedic literature, and they were enthralled. They couldn't believe, like one famous German philosopher, he was so impressed with the Brahmin class, because they had real value in qualities of virtue. At that time, people respected those kind of qualities, like, you know, being courteous and being charitable and temperament and having generosity, how and so many different things that are really important to have as qualities of a person and of a society. So they were very impressed with that. The French also, they started reading the Vedas, and one great philosopher commented about, he said that the Ganges, he says that all the knowledge that's coming from around the Ganges, is said that is like the womb of the world. They were so impressed with the literature that was being written and lived at that time. But the acceptance of the Vedic literature weathered some very rough waters. It's not like it was, you know, all of a sudden just accepted. As I said, most of, even now, I think it's a lot of it's mythology. But it did go many places and enlivened different philosophers. Well, of course, we hear of Emerson. He was so excited when he's called it the treasure box, when he received some of the, I think the Bhagavad Gita that was translated. Later on, it was more accepted. And we see now that heads begin to turn to the East, looking for answers, not really being satisfied with just material knowledge. But they didn't want to just study the Vedas. They wanted, now we see that people want to experience this knowledge. So they're trying yoga, they're trying mantras, they're trying to really live a spiritual life by studying these Vedic literatures, trying to get some peace of mind. People are looking for some transcendentalist who can tell them how to do that. And they're also looking for truth, and self-realization is becoming very popular. So we hope that direction keeps, you know, pushing everyone towards the Vedic literature, because it is a wealth of knowledge. And it can bring us to the topmost understanding of who we are in relationship with the Supreme. So this is a little sign that people are using their human form of life, that they're beginning to ask questions and look for the right answers. I've noticed that this pandemic thing, that people had a little bit more time by themselves and a time for reflection, to actually try to maybe understand that maybe our human, so-called human behavior is not up to par, and maybe this is a result of our misuse of the planet, misuse of our relationships with other people. So hopefully something will become good out of that. Or maybe they want even, if they can face it, look at themselves in the mirror and realize that our society are made up of very selfish people, very self-centered people, very short-range vision, not thinking of the future, not thinking of other people, and we're just not helping the planet at all. And we can experience that ourselves. The karmic reaction is very heavy. There's so many catastrophes now, and who are we to blame? We're the ones. And so hopefully people are realizing that. In that short little lockdown that we had, when everything was, you know, there wasn't even a car out there, it was like really quiet, people started listening to birds, and they could actually, you know, listen to themselves, think a little bit. And then the pollution, what happened to it? A lot of it cleared up, the sky and the land, and rivers. It actually should have a wake-up call that, you know, maybe we're going in the wrong direction. And also, I think a lot of people started to pray. And they realized that we're not in control. Of more than anything, I think we realized that we can't stop it. You know, we can try, but, you know, it came on its own accord. And everything is actually controlled by someone besides ourselves. So the definition of civilization is that it's an advanced state of human society, that the society has a very high level of cultural and scientific advancement. So this is the definition. The Srila Prabhupada, he was very emphatic, and he said, don't be allured by this machine civilization. Why? Because it is a soul-killing civilization. That is our cost for all these fancy-dancy machines. All the little, those kind of machines. Is that it is soul-killing. It might not seem like that way, but it does. It distracts you from what you should really be doing. Of course, devotees can learn how to use these things and turn them off in class, but so this is something we don't want to waste our human form of life just in sense gratification. Prabhupada said it again and again and again. It's a waste of human life. It's just simply animal life. So the Vedic culture was strong for quite a long time, as most civilizations are. They go on for a long time. But because it was spreading all over the world, of course, it gradually began to become somewhat degraded, and it metamorphized into other cultures. And the religion was still there, but, you know, mixed and different, although we do find evidence of it there. And then we find that about in the 17th century, that there was a lot of catastrophe, something like 2020, and people started to not have faith in religion, because they kind of said, God, how can you let this happen, you know? And so they actually began a little bit on the road of scientific advancement. And this took them all the way up to the Industrial Revolution, which was like the springboard. Then science, technology, it took fire. And what had happened is it just pushed God aside and said, pretty much ran over God. And it said, we don't need God anymore because we have the machines that can do everything. We have the factories, and we don't need to depend on our animals so you can slaughter them. We don't need to depend on the rains and everything because we can grow things and we can do this, we can make that. So we saw a big decline in religion, especially in family religions and the tightness of family. It's there in history. And that went on, has gone on for quite some time. And then there was a depression. At the depression, then people got a little bit rattled and became more inward. They became more worried about themselves, not so much about society, and more about their own comfort, their own strive to stay alive. And now modern civilization, of course, the goal is technology. Somehow or other, make myself comfortable here in this material world. And at the cost of others, at the cost of anything, but I want to be comfortable. So we have technology at its best, or its worst, however you want to take it. Because technology is going to make us comfortable, and then we're going to be happy. And how much happier are we? Are we a lot happier? I don't know. But Srila Prabhupada, he said that, like in this quote that I said, he said that with a society without God consciousness, it's not a civilization. And no matter what you do to try to be happy, you're going to end up with just a bunch of zeros. And then what happens? Your life becomes just hankering for all these things that you don't need and lamenting because you lose them, obviously. And you run around for this fictitious happiness. You know, everything is promised you that you're going to enjoy, but it's fictitious. And for that running around, what happens is that your whole purpose in life is lost. So this is not going to make a very civilized civilization of a lot of unsatisfied people. So Srila Prabhupada was very kind. He came here, and he redirected us. He directed us to go inward and to find out who we really are, to find out the soul, become self-realized and God-realized, and to become a lot happier and a lot more intelligent, and to rededicate our lives for the goal of becoming Krishna conscious. Otherwise, it's, you know, he's called it, you know, animals walking on four-legged animals, but walking there, walking on two-legged. So he describes it, and there's one place where he said that if you were to get all the dogs in the neighborhood here and ask them to come in here and have a discussion, that we're going to have some peace in this neighborhood. Okay, all the dogs are going to discuss it, and they're going to figure out how to distribute all the food properly, and no one's going to get upset about if they come on the other lawns, and we're not going to be barking. And is that going to happen? Never. And he described that the United Nations was the same thing, a bunch of barking dogs. No, this is my property, that's mine, that's mine, that's mine. It's the same thing. It's not going to happen because there's no center, there's no God consciousness, and there's no respect for everyone being part of God. So this is just a symptom of a degraded society. But there's some other symptoms. And the foremost one that Prabhupada said that he always harped on was that the biggest transgression of the laws of nature are the slaughter of innocent animals, of our killing our father and our mother. This is just transgresses everything. And there's going to be reaction. There's going to be catastrophes. So we can see that that's there all over the world. And then another sign is, of course, the mother killing the unborn, their unborn children. It can't be accepted as civilized life or human life, doing something like that. But our leaders are saying it's okay. So that's a bad sign. And then another sign of ignorance is that this false identification of the self, thinking that we're just this body, which is pretty much the consciousness level of most people, it extends into, you know, family and society and nations. And so therefore we have, like for the UN example, that we have now have enemies. We're actually all part of Krishna, and Krishna owns everything, and we're all, you know, servants of him, but now we have enemies. And with those enemies, we're always fearful. Constantly fearful. I mean, how many, you know, just look at the newspaper every day. What about China? What about this? What are they doing? What's happening? This warship, and they're doing this and that, and that in the air, and they're doing this here and that. Because everyone's fearful that something's going to happen. Because we have enemies, but we really don't have enemies if everyone is Krishna conscious. So this is no way to have a peaceful society. So now we're getting a little bit spanked on our backside by the material energy with this coronavirus. Hopefully it's a little bit of a wake-up. If you drive around town, there's billboards now, and it says, "We're all in this together." So now, all of a sudden, you know, it's all of us. You know, what are we going to do? And they don't have any idea what they're going to do. They made a mess of it. We all made a mess of everything. But now it's everyone's fault. And now we have to do something. And what are they going to do? We have to listen to Srila Prabhupada and the Vedas. They have to reorganize. They have to reconsider their behavior and their goals in life. And so this information that we have is of such value. It's the greatest benefit for the entire world, this Vedic knowledge, and this idea of a society of based on spiritual consciousness. Because we have solutions. I want to read the last sentence of what I wrote, read earlier. So it said that the human society, I'll read the last sentence. "The point should be clearly discussed that without God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, any attempt of human civilization, so-called philosophical or political or economical or labor, they are all zeros. The human society should be divided as a social order, as the intellectual men, the administrator class, and the mercantile class, and the labor class." So this is what he's saying. He's talking about Varnashram. This is the answer. And Prabhupada says it again and again and again. The Krishna consciousness movement is trying to establish this right system of human civilization. This is interesting. He says, "Unless in the human society the Varnashram system is introduced, no scheme or social order, health order, or any order, political order, will be successful. So if you want to remodel your life, the society, the human society, nationally or internationally, everything is spoken here. International, then you have to take to the advice of Krishna. This is the purpose of Krishna consciousness movement, wholesale, thorough overhauling of the human society. We have not manufactured anything, concocted things. It is very scientific. If you actually want to fulfill the mission of your life, then you have to take to this advice of Bhagavad Gita. Very scientific, and spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead without any defects." So this is a lot that we have to offer and a lot of solutions. And so some of the solutions, of course, are that the civilization must have some organization, realizing especially trained leaders, the heads, the brahminical, the kshatriyas, have to be trained in the proper way to be leaders. Not, Prabhupada said in one place, not to construct construction of beautiful houses for them, but construction of character. So it's very important that they are trained with a higher standard of brahminical life. And then they can train others and give guidance to the other classes and move them forward to worship Krishna and to learn to surrender to Krishna. The kshatriyas, they manage and protect, very important. If everything's managed nicely, no anxiety, right? If you feel protected, there's no anxiety. So important. The sudras, they need to be trained to be obedient, that's all, and to be humble. And so this training is very, it must mean that you have to become responsible. You have to train each one to be responsible for their work and to realize their connection with the other classes so that they can all work together. So this organization is so important. And so we should endeavor to establish that. Another important thing that Prabhupada always said was that a first-class civilization, the first training should be there in the beginning of life. Does anyone have any idea? That all men should be trained to see all women, except their wife, as mother. How important is that? Many of you ladies weren't, some of you have been raised in Krishna consciousness, but those who haven't been, you know what it's like to walk around in society. You feel exploited. I was so happy when I finally got old and ugly and everyone's just looking at my daughter, you know, instead of looking at me. It was such a relief. And it's not just in the West. You know, we took girls to India, teenage girls to India, and men were smashing into walls looking at our girls. And the girls were like, you know, they were having a great time laughing about it because, you know. But you feel exploited. You feel, it's very uncomfortable. You don't feel protected. So it's such a relief to have men that are trained to respect their mother. It's described in scriptures that the mother should be, is 10 times more respected than the guru. That's how important. So if you actually feel that way, then you will respect all women and not, don't give them a hard time. You know, just let them advance in Krishna consciousness. That's why we have, you know, some people say, why are the women over here? Why are the men over here? And of course, Papa said, butter and fire, it melts. So just out of respect, we don't want to disturb each other. So this is very important that training is there. And of course, there's the training of the classes of brahmachari, sannyas, all this is spiritual ashrams are a shelter because they give you strength to go through life and keep your mind situated on the supreme goal, which is Krishna. And then you have such a higher taste that you can automatically say no to all the temptations of sinful life. What a relief to actually have control of your senses and not be tempted by Maya. How much more peaceful a civilization would be. So this regulated life is also stressed. Srila Prabhupada also describes that for a real civilized life that one should, he recommended that we try to pull ourselves away of being so dependent on technology. That have more localization of growing and working together, providing our own things, not so dependent, and forgetting about how dependent we really are on Krishna and his mercy. Become very simple in our living, and very high in our thinking. So these are some other things that he instructed us to do. And he has a very nice statement here. It says, our duty is to save human civilization. You see, Krishna wants it. So this is an instruction that we should all take to heart, whatever way we can, that our duty is to save human civilization. That's a big job. But Prabhupada was thinking that way, that he's going to save civilization. And he was training Brahmins for us to put a head on the shoulders of what's left of the civilization and start guiding it. So we have to be willing to sacrifice maybe some of our other ideas of what we'd like to do in this lifetime and try to fulfill this desire of Srila Prabhupada. But it's not easy. Many people don't see the big picture of the importance of self-realization and everything. They're busy just doing what? Taking selfies, right? That's their self-realization. You know? It's just taking selfies of everybody. You know, they could care less about anything else. So we need to change their vision a little bit, that they're wasting their life. So they're looking for answers. The society needs answers, and they need guidance, and they need it as soon as possible. And so that should be our goal, to contribute to that mission of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. We've been reading recently in the Bhagavatam about Bhishma Dev leaving, and he left some very important messages to the king, the future king of the world. And he said that these are some qualities that you are needed to really master the civilization. He said that the civilized human being is trained to successfully terminate life. So that is the ultimate goal. It's actually first how to become self-realized, finish up our business here, and get out for good. And for that, we need certain qualifications. So he lists 9 qualifications. Can you remember one? We just read it last week. So the 9 qualifications for a really civil human being. Number 1, you don't lie. You don't become angry. You equally distribute wealth everywhere. Equally. You have to be forgiving. And you beget children only by a legitimate wife. You be pure in mind and hygienic in body. Papa said clean inside and out. And not to be inimical towards anyone. To be simple. And to support servants or subordinates. So maybe you're going through your mind thinking, I'm a little shy on that one, I'm a little shy on that one. Just today, I actually had an incident. I want to publicly apologize. The person isn't here. But he announced that if you cut one potato, it counts as 10 million potatoes because of the karchik the last day. So I had a lot of help in the kitchen. Actually, I had help in the kitchen before I even got there at 7 o'clock. And one person said, oh, look what I did. And I kind of disregarded it. But then I thought, it was such a nice thing to already have something done, and I didn't give any, recognition to that person. And I felt really bad after that because it did help, And I thought I was being inimical. I was being not thinking about the other person. If you look at these 9 qualities, it's all about relating to other people, to realize that all lives matter. That's another quote going around now, right? All lives matter. All souls matter. And all these qualities are in how to be in relationship, in a nice relationship with everyone. And you think of Bhishma, such a civilized person and such a nice civilization. But you could see that who came at his departure? People from other planets. Not only did he have a relationship with people on this planet, so many people came, but he had relationships with people on other planets. I mean, we can't get along even in our families, or with our wife or kid, But they had demigods coming down from other planets, and because they had respect for each other and visiting. Prabhupada said now the demigods don't even visit here to pass urine. So we have a lot of work to do. And Srila Prabhupada wanted us to introduce this ISKCON, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He was thinking, this is international. This society is going to take over the world. And how is that going to happen? By distributing a lot of Bhagavad Gitas. Because all this knowledge is in the Bhagavad Gita. That one single book is so important. It's so impressive. It's impressing people all over the world. So we need to distribute as many as possible. And Gita Jayanti is coming up. So we should rack our brains how we can get these out there, because they need these answers. And they need to get trained as leaders. They need to come here and learn how to become civilized and be effective in changing the direction that this planet is going. So if anyone has any ideas where I can distribute some Bhagavad Gita, let me know. Because I usually go to campuses and things like sit down and you know, it's even knocking on doors now, it's difficult, talking to people is difficult. But if anyone has any ideas how we can massively do it, that would be appreciated. So maybe some people have some comments or discussion on this subject? Ideas of how we can become more civil.
I have one question. So you said that abortion is not a good idea, I agree, but if they say Krishna consciousness is not introduced, but if somebody born from a mother who is eating beef and he grow up as a, like doing all sinful activities, it's better he didn't even show up. He was not born. It's better than he's committing more sins. So what is your answer?
We show up at their door and say, open your mouth. And stick a cookie in their mouth.
Very good.
There's an answer. We have the answers. If nothing else, prasadam never fails. And it can change. It can change people. Prasadam changes people. We did that play one time, and I remember Brenda, she was anger. And it was about the age of Kali. And she was anger and went out there, and she came back, and she said, oh, I tried to be angry and everything, but then someone said, would you like a cookie? And then it was really cute how the Sankirtan devotees just ruined Kali's program. And now it's the holy name also. They just hear the holy name somewhere and their hearts can change. And it's their last lifetime. Anything else?
Anyone has any?
Thank you very much. Sorry, I missed the rest of the class. I got here so late. But on your point about prasadam, that is so powerful. It is completely effective. And I've been here in Alachua for 10 years, coming from another ISKCON project where we raise our kids. And to me, it's just so obvious. This whole area has been infected by Krishna lunch and Krishna house in this temple, unlike any other place in the country. Let alone all the Rathi Yatras, and we're slowly poisoning people. You know, really. In my realization yesterday, I was at home doing some yard work, and I just had this realization that Prabhupada came here to invade the planet, to actually invade the planet, to inundate it with Lord Chaitanya's movement. And so it's completely blissful, and it cannot be stopped. And so even though we may not see the end, like the great cathedrals of Europe that take hundreds of years to build, we're just doing one little part. So it's like so blissful to know we can be part of that. And to your point, when I first got Prabhupada's books, like that was like so mind-altering for me. But I realized Prabhupada's books made me a devotee, but prasadam keeps us devotees. So anyways, leave it at that.
Well, glories to the Krishna house for that energy put into it.
So thank you so much for the class. It was provoking a thought for me about how someone coming from the West with this idealism that we can all become whatever we want to, just depends on how hard we work. Someone might be a little disturbed by these comments about how a woman can't go into, or isn't recommended to go into a life of renunciation. Women should just go into marriage. So I was just thinking, how would you explain this concept to someone from the Western conditioning in a way that would not be so disturbing and would actually make some sense?
Well, they can come visit our temple. Here is a woman's giving class. This is actually a good place to come here and see that no matter what color or what shape you're in, you can progress up spiritually, you know, that there's no limit, there's no anything like that. So we're actually much freer and happier, and there's unlimited engagement we can do. So they just have to see for themselves. You know, they have to experience it. And they hear so many things that, you know, they're less this, less than that. But, just come to Lacha and you'll see. That's a good example. But, that mentality is there. But Prabhupada was expert because he engaged all of us. He wasn't on this bodily concept. So they're the ones that have the problem because they're on the bodily concept, not us. They just have to surrender and then they'll see that their real self will come out. And there is really no limit to what you can do. Thanks to Prabhupada. Okay, whoops.
I could just comment to Brihatmadanga Prabhu's question about women and marriage. Yeah? Because I have some quotes here. I actually just gave a presentation about this morning from my class. So this is a quote, a conversation, Srila Prabhupada in Washington, D.C., 1976. Prabhupada says, if one can remain without marriage, that is first class. Then Rupanuga Prabhu says, women also? And Prabhupada says, women also. What is the use of this material husband? Make Krishna your husband. Krishna is prepared to become everything. Love him as husband, love him as son, love him as friend. And then a year later in Bombay, he says, if one becomes Krishna conscious, then she doesn't require a husband. She does not require. She knows that Krishna is my protector. Why shall I artificially seek after father or husband? And what protection for a few days either the father or the son or the husband may give? Real protection is Krishna. So, of course, Prabhupada said in many places that women should get married. And he definitely felt that was, important for the protection of women. But it's not like a hard and fast rule that all women must get married. There may be some, you know, rare advanced souls who can really accept Krishna's protection and feel completely secure in that and be taken care of within the context of Vaishnava Sangha.
Just, yeah. From the Western view, you can say that as far as spiritual progression, there is no difference. Anybody can, there is man or woman, anybody has privilege. But as far as ashram, the man are given with
more, which is obvious. They can take sannyas, but the women can't. So some women do think, this is actually a repeated question thing, that why in your organization the women are not given. But I appreciate Mother also made a point that as far as progressing in spiritual life, there is no limit. It's personal, whether men or women, they can take it. But that's a very nice quote, thank you. Yeah, anyone else?
We took our girls to Montreal one time. And has anyone ever seen Manohar there? The deity there? Really tall, really dark, and really handsome. And I said, you girls, don't worry about finding a husband. Just make him your husband. He's tall, dark, and handsome. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. Keep going.